I'm Kay Crawford, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. And while I was sitting over there, I had the uncontrollable urge to get up here and apologize to you for not having a real Al-Anon speaker today. But all I can do, a good friend of mine told me, all I can do is tell my story. That's all I have. I don't have any other thing that I can give you except tell you my story. When we walked in here yesterday, we were here 6 years ago, and I had forgotten how big this place is. And I looked through those doors back there, and I saw a sea of chairs. And I said, my God, are they expecting that many people? And you showed up. So with saying that, I'm going to say what my sponsor told me when I first started doing this. And I'm not good at this. I don't like to do it at all, but I know when I say yes that I've got to follow through. She said, Kay, nobody can tell your story but you. And just think of it this way. Tomorrow, they're not going to remember what you said. And next month, they're not even going to remember who talked. So, with that, I'm going to tell you what Elizabeth Taylor told one of her husbands. I'm not going to keep you long. I hope I always remember to say this when I get in front of a group of members of Alcoholics Anonymous and members of Al-Anon, to say how grateful I am for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a sober husband, and I'll always be grateful for that. But I'm equally grateful for Al-Anon, because Al-Anon gave me back me. I had lost me somewhere in the throes of alcoholism, and it was not until I walked through the doors of Al-Anon that I was given a recipe for living, the 12 steps, that I could put back together a life that was once almost destroyed by someone else's drinking. Because you see, Bill's drinking became a problem to me a long time before it became a problem to him. And I fought it the only way I knew how to fight it. I tried to make him quit. And I say today, if somebody's doing something that hurts me or is bothering me, I'm going to try to make him quit. And I can say today that everything that I did, I honestly did to make matters better for us. I didn't mean to become this angry, bitter person that I became. But see, I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I didn't know that it could rip you of all your self-respect, your self-esteem, and your self-worth, and it can just rip you of everything you have. And that's what alcoholism did to me. Well, I need to get back and tell you where I came from. I'm an only child of two people who were very much in love. They were young and in love, and they didn't have a whole lot. They got married, and they had me. And my dad is, he's still living. He's 83, just turned 83. And he's a kind and gentle man. He's a very caring and loving person. I've always had the love and respect of my father, and I've always loved and respected him also. He probably doesn't have an eighth grade education, but I'm here to tell you that he has a master's degree in love for his family. Because he didn't have a family when he was growing up. Both his parents died when he was 6 months old. And it was in the flu epidemic of 1918. So he grew up without a mother and daddy. His grandmother raised him. So he had a hard time growing up. He didn't have a whole lot. And I think he tried to give me some of the things that he didn't have. And my mother is a good way to describe my mother is that she's a very spiritual lady. She's a very plain woman. She was raised in the era when women were raised to look after the men in their lives. And she did a very good job of it. When my grandmother died, my mother made a commitment to her that she would look after my grandfather. And so my grandfather lived with us until I was married and out of the house. And I can remember at my grandfather's funeral, the minister came over to my mother and took her hand and said, "Mission accomplished," because she had done what she was supposed to have done. She did a very good job. And I think that's where I learned or thought I was supposed to look after people. I think I was looking for somebody to look after when I met my husband. Well, I didn't know anything about alcoholism as growing up. Neither one of my parents drank, and I always like to say this, I'm a Baptist, and I was raised Baptist, and you know what they say about Baptists, they don't drink in front of each other. My parents did on occasion have alcohol in the home. But I never saw it abused. I never saw either one of them under the influence at all. It was not a problem. It did not interfere with our lives at all. But I did know what alcohol would do. I think everybody has an uncle who is an alcoholic or drinks too much, and I was no exception. One of my uncles periodically would get drunk and stay drunk for a while, and on Saturday night he would call the preacher. The preacher would come over and say a prayer over him, and the next day was Sunday and he'd go to church and walk down in front and get saved, and he would stay sober as long as he could, and then he'd get drunk, and he'd stay drunk for a while and repeat that situation over and over again. That was alcoholism. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I didn't think I would have to deal with anything like that. And then one summer afternoon, my mother and I were sitting out on the porch. And that was in the summertime when people sat out on front porches and we all knew the neighbors. We were in a very close neighborhood and everybody knew each other. We watched the man across the street come out on the front porch with a shotgun. And he was running his family off from home. And I looked at Mother and I said, "What in the world's happening?" And she shrugged it off, said, "Oh, Joe's drunk again." Well, see, I knew Joe. And I knew that he did not act like, I knew that he didn't want to do that. I liked Joe. Everybody in the neighborhood liked Joe. They used to say about him, "Joe's a good man if he just didn't drink." And Joe was the man who dressed up like Santa Claus every Christmas, and he came around and knocked on our doors and windows and played Santa Claus to us kids. We all knew who it was. So we knew he didn't want to act like that. But on Saturday night, he turned into a monster, alcoholism. But I said, you know, I'm not going to have to deal with anything like that. I'm not going to put up with anything like that. I don't think I'll have to. Because see, I thought I had that power. I really thought I had that power, that I could make somebody else do what I wanted them to make them, to do what I wanted them to do. Well, I grew up in the late 40s and early 50s, listening to rock and roll and rhythm and blues. And I still like rock and roll and rhythm and blues, and I see on the program that you got to dance tonight, and I can't wait. I love to dance, and, you know, I don't get the chance too often, so I'm going to really take advantage of it tonight if I can get that old man I'm married to dance with me. But I had a great time. I had a lot of girlfriends, and I had my share of boyfriends, and I even had a couple of guys that I just danced with because I loved it so much. And Mother and Daddy would take me to the beach, and I loved the beach, and it was just a good time. Growing up in the 50s, if you don't know anything about it, I just feel sorry for you, because it was a wonderful time. I had a great time. And I like to say, in my senior year of high school, a life-changing event happened to me. I was in art class, and our teacher was named Mr. Coker. And this was kind of a loose class. Everybody talked back and forth and talked about what they did over the weekend and what they were going to do this next weekend. And Mr. Coker had a couple of us up in front of the class, and we were posing as the rest of the class sketched us. And I can remember hearing over my shoulder someone saying, "Well, I guess I'll draw her boobs now." And I looked over there, and my life changed. I fell in love. And Mr. Coker, the reason I remember his name is because that year, at the end of the year, he signed my annual, and he said to Kay, the girl with problems. And you know, he, after that, Bill didn't have a chance. He did not have a chance. I made it a point to be where he was before he got there. And Mr. Coker had ears too, and he could hear the conversations during class, and he knew that there was drinking going on, and he knew, he heard the talk about how much they drank this weekend and the party that they were going to next weekend and how important drinking was, you know. And so he knew when he said to the girl with problems, he knew what he was saying, because that was the beginning. This was the beginning of my obsession. When you hear an alcoholic talk, they talk about their obsession with alcohol. When I talk about my obsession with him. I was totally obsessed with him, what he was doing, where he was, where he was going. That was my total thoughts of what I could do. Of course, in the early days, you know, the drinking was fun. Everybody did it. You know, he'll settle down. Well, I can remember my first date with him. It was a formal dance, and I couldn't wait. And it was at the Old Shriners Club out on High Point Road in Greensboro. And we went to that dance, and we double dated with somebody. I don't even remember who, but I can remember several times during that dance, Bill and the guys went out to the car, passing a bottle around. I knew what they were doing, but that was okay. Everybody else was doing it. And when he came back into the dance, he paid me a little more attention. We danced a little more, and I liked that. So I can say, in the beginning, drinking was not a problem. It was probably what attracted me to him in the first place. So life went on. And I was, you know, I was totally consumed with this man from the very beginning. He joined the Army, and I got out of high school, and I had no desire to go to college or to further my education at all, but at the encouragement of my parents, they encouraged me to take a secretarial course at Women's College in Greensboro. So it's now UNCG. And I did that, and I'm so grateful that I did, because after taking that course, the school placement office placed me in a position with a family-owned business in Greensboro that I continued to work with off and on until I retired about 6 years ago. So I'm grateful for that. But, I still didn't know anything about alcoholism. I knew the drinking was getting out of hand. I knew he was drinking too much, but I said, you know, when we get married, I can stop this. You know, I know that he will love me enough that he won't drink. I know that that's what will happen. So he was in the Army, and I was back in Greensboro working. And I like to say that when he left to go to the Army, I promised that I would write every day. And he promised too, but you know how it is. He wrote when he could, and I kept my promise and wrote every day. And I noticed he came home a couple of times, and I noticed that the drinking had progressed. I know it was getting worse. But I said, no worry, no sweat. Just wait till we get married. It'll level off. See, I didn't understand alcoholism. I didn't know what alcoholism was. I did not know that it was progressive, and I didn't know that it was a family disease. So one day, I was at work, opening my mail, and there was a letter. And I know this embarrasses him so much, but this is my story. I'm sticking with it. But there was he had written it on a piece of notebook paper, and up at the top, in pencil, he had proposal. And it said, "Dear Kay, will you marry me?" You know what I said. I couldn't wait. And so I started planning a wedding. And we were engaged on my 20th birthday. And we were going to plan the wedding for the next year. He was in the Army, and I was still in Greensboro working. And Mother and Daddy said, you know, that they didn't, we were not of means at all. But my parents let me have my wedding. I think it took them probably a year or so to pay for it, but they let me have a wedding like I wanted. And I had planned one. I'd had bridesmaids and ushers. Today, it wouldn't be considered a big one, but in my day, it was. And I can remember 2 weeks before the wedding, I picked him up at the train station. He came home on a two-week leave for us to get married. And I can remember sitting out in front of the train station, and he was saying things like, "Kay, what do I want to get married for? I don't need to get married. I'm young. My buddies are saying, Crawford, you're crazy. You know, but I'm telling you, I am here to stand right here and tell you that the wedding was planned and there was going to be a wedding." There's no way in the world. There was no way in the world I could have called that wedding off. No way. I was talking somewhere several years ago, and after the meeting, a young lady came up to me and with tears streaming down her face, and she says, "I just called off a wedding because of his drinking." There's no way I could have done that. No way. Because you see, I thought I could change it. I knew I could change it. Just give me a chance, and I would. So I wish I could say that on September the 19th, 1959, I walked down the aisle of that church, that Baptist church, and I lived happily ever after. I wish I could say that. But you know, when there's alcoholism in a family, you can't say that. So we got married and moved to directly to Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. That's where he was stationed. And, of course, I had been separated from him for a while, but I really saw the progression then. I really saw it. And that's where I started trying things to make him quit, you know. And I can remember sitting in front of the window, looking out the window, watching the cars go by. Have any of you ever done that? You know, that's a lonely, lonely time. When you know, in the far depths of your soul, where he is and what he's doing. But you think, you know, any minute he's going to come home. And I did that for so long. I can't tell you how long I did that. And I've poured it out. I've screamed. I've hollered. I've slammed doors. I've done everything that any of you have done. I've prayed, you know, I thought I was praying. Dear God, just please let him come home. And then when he came home, I gave him hell, you know. That's the way it was. And then, you know, I looked at other couples who were having children, and I saw, that's it. If we had a child, he would have to stop drinking then. And so our son was born, Steve. And I can remember standing over his crib, looking at him, this beautiful baby boy, sleeping, and saying to myself, this child will never drink. Because you see, I thought I had that power. I thought I could had that power to change another human being. And I nearly drove myself crazy trying to do it. And when Steve was a month old, Bill got out of the Army and we moved back to Greensboro. And when Steve was 3 months old, I found out I was going to have another baby. And then Kelly came along. And I knew that having Steve didn't cure his alcoholism, so I was pretty sure that having Kelly wouldn't either. So here I was. I didn't know what to do. I read everything I could read on alcoholism. I talked to people who would just stand still and listen to me, asking what I could do. I went to my minister and asked him. He knew what to tell Bill to do. He knew to tell him to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, but he didn't know anything about Al-Anon, so he didn't tell me anything. He said, Kay, you've just got to pray. You just got to pray. Well, I didn't know how to pray. I had no idea how to pray. Well, things went on, and as always, the drinking got worse. I have done things that I am ashamed of and embarrassed about, but that's where alcoholism took me. I think I was real famous for going to look for him. You know, I don't hear the girls talking about that today, going to look for them when their husbands don't come home, but I was really good at that. I knew I had radar. I could zone in on where he was and go get him. And I can, you know, it didn't matter where it was. It could be at somebody's home. It could be at a motel. It could be at a watering hole. It could be anywhere. I had no shame. I would march right in and make a fool of myself. And I can remember one specific time that stands out in my mind. He promised me faithfully that he'd be home from work for dinner that night. And so I fixed a nice dinner, and I got the kids in bed, but no Bill. He didn't show up. And I waited, and I waited till I could wait no longer. So I got the kids up, put them in the back of the car, and here we go looking. Kind of knew where he was. You know, we've got that radar. We know. So I pulled up the Coliseum Motel on the High Point Road, and I didn't know what room he was in. Had no idea. So I just got out and started knocking on doors. And this man came to the door, and I said, tell Bill Crawford to get out here. And he said, who? And I said, Bill Crawford, I know he's in there. And he said, lady, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, yeah, right. And I pushed that door open and I walked in. And I looked around and that room was full and I didn't recognize a soul in there. And so I moseyed on back to the bathroom where the bathroom was, and there Bill was hiding from me. And you know, I don't remember whether he came home with me or not. All I remember is that I went home and I was so sick. This is where alcoholism had brought me. This is where alcoholism had lowered me too. I felt so bad. I can't tell you how bad I felt. And one significant thing about this particular situation, I usually forget to tell this in my talk, but two of the guys that were in that room had just gotten out of jail for something. A murder, I guess, I don't know. But, you know, anything could have happened to me. Anything. And I'm just grateful that God was looking after me then, too. Well, after that situation, you know, I had been looking for answers for so long, and I think I knew then that I was powerless. I just wouldn't give up. I just wouldn't give up. And so, because I knew of a man who was in Alcoholics Anonymous, I had his number. I had never met him, and you heard last night how Bill contacted AA, and I kept that number. And when he wouldn't call, I don't know how long after that it was that I called, but I called him. And I said, "You don't remember my husband, I'm sure, and I know I've never talked to you before, but is there anything that I can do to help him stop drinking? Our life is a mess." And he kind of chuckled. I'll never forget it. He said, "No, I wish there were, but, you know, there's nothing you can do. You got to wait until he's ready to quit." But better than that, he put his wife, Lib, on the phone, and she told me about Al-Anon. And at that time, there were only two meetings in Greensboro, one on Wednesday night, the speaker meeting, and one on Tuesday night, a discussion meeting. And I heard a gal in Greensboro say not too long ago that she started at the Tuesday night group, and she thought if she started at the Tuesday night group, she couldn't go to the Wednesday night group. You know, I mean, and I thought the same thing. I started on Wednesday night, and I couldn't go to anywhere, but thank God I stayed long enough to know that I could go to all of them. But anyway, I could not wait till Wednesday night. I couldn't wait. Because, see, I knew that they were going to give me the answer when I got there. I knew that they were going to tell me to do this and this and this and this, and he's going to stop drinking. I knew that. Well, that was almost 34 years ago, and nobody's told me the answer yet. But anyway, I remember that first meeting. It was a very small meeting. There were probably not 10 or 12, maybe 15 people there. But every one of them came over to me and said how glad they were that I was there. They said, "You're in the right place. If somebody else's drinking is bothering you, you're in the right place, and please keep coming back." And they gave me their phone number, every one of them, it seemed like. And so I couldn't wait to get back. And I can remember them reading the steps on maybe my first or second meeting, and I thought, isn't that nice? There they are, reading those steps of Alcoholics Anonymous to remind us of what they're supposed to do. I had no idea those steps were for me. Thank God I stayed long enough to realize that this was a program for me, a recipe for living that I could take and apply to my life and put it back together. Thank God I stayed long enough. Well, I guess one of the most comforting things I heard when I first came in, that, Kay, it ain't your fault. It is not your fault. And I thought for so long it was. I thought that if I were a better person, if I were a better wife, or if I were a better mother, he wouldn't drink so much. But they even went as far to tell me, had I never met him, he would still be an alcoholic. And that was a relief. That was such a relief. They gave me a definition of alcoholism that I could understand. Now, I might have heard one along the way, but this one that they gave me, I could understand. They said he's physically allergic to alcohol, and once any amount is in his system, a mental obsession took over. And I could understand that, because I had seen that happen so many times. That was one of the things I couldn't understand, why he couldn't take one drink and stop. I could. Why couldn't he? And so that made me understand alcoholism a little better. I kept coming to meetings. And I can remember the first inventory that I took. You know, when I first came into Al-Anon, I didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I really didn't. I thought if you just removed that alcohol, that I would be okay, and everything else would be okay. But that ain't the case. You know, thank God I stayed long enough in this program to realize and to take an inventory and to realize that I had contributed a lot to where I was, and it was not his fault. I realized that I was the most jealous human being on the face of this earth. I realized that I was most possessive. I would take something that I loved and almost smother it to death because I thought that if I did that, that you would love me. And I almost destroyed it. And I was the most self-righteous person that ever came through the doors. You know, I kind of looked down my nose at people who drank. You know, I saw a t-shirt one time, lips that touch liquor will never touch mine, or something like that, you know, and that's the attitude I took. I was a sick, angry, bitter human being when I first came in here. Thank God I stayed long enough for the miracle to happen. As I told you, I thought when the drinking was removed and Bill finally came, as he said last night, he finally came into the program. But I thought when the drinking stopped, I thought that our problems would be over. I really did think that. But life goes on. And I didn't know him. I really didn't know him sober. And so he was in AA, and I was in Al-Anon, and these two little kids that we had early on, they were 5 and 6 years old. And we stayed in the program, and we tried to raise these kids like they were supposed to be raised. And I think raising them in the program of AA and Al-Anon is not a bad place. I think it's great. I am so grateful that we had it. But they grow up. And when they were teenagers, I was so glad I had a program. Because things happen. That little boy that I stood over his cradle and said that he would never drink, came home. He was about 15 years old. He came home and he'd been drinking. And I want you to know that every bit of Al-Anon that I had went out the window, just like that. Just like that. I started asking him the same questions that I used to ask his daddy. Where have you been? What have you been doing, and how much have you had to drink? And I suppose over the years I have asked that question 1,000 times, and I have never gotten an answer. Never gotten an answer. But when that happened, you know, I lost it. I totally lost it. But there was a difference this time. I had a program. I had a sponsor that I called. And that's what I had to do. I called my sponsor, and I got with her. And I went to meetings. And I read my literature, and I prayed my prayers. And you know, the miracle of this program did it. It carried me through that. And looking back, I know that the people in this program carried me through that. God, working through the people of this program, carried me through that. And now, a little later, I hope I remember to tell you about Steve. And then when my daughter was 18 years old, let me tell you about Kelly. When Kelly was born, you know, she was my little girl. And I wanted to dress her in organdy and lace and have patent leather shoes and, you know, have a little lady, and I wanted to pick her friends, and I wanted to
who she associated with and everything. I wanted to ruin her life, in other words. I thought I had that power. And I'd been in Al-Anon a long time. But I thought I had that power. And from the time Kelly was 11 years old till she was 18 years old, we clashed. Because she didn't want to do what I wanted her to do. And, she just didn't want to do what Mama said. And we, as I said, we clashed. And we didn't get along. I loved her with all my heart and soul, but I didn't like anything that she was doing. She adopted a lifestyle that I could not accept. And I had been told in Al-Anon so many times I didn't have to accept unacceptable behavior. Now, although Kelly experimented with alcohol, but that was not the problem. That was not Kelly's problem. I think Kelly had a behavioral problem. And so a situation happened on the night she graduated from high school that forced me to ask her to leave our home. And I want you to know, folks, that was the hardest thing that I have ever done in my life, was to ask my daughter to leave our home. But I knew in my heart of hearts that I had to do it for my sanity. I knew I had to do it, and so she left. She did not stay gone long, but there were some things happened that she made an agreement with us to come back home, and so she did. But I can't tell you how hard that was for me. But my sponsor made it clear to me that I needed to keep the communication open with her, and that's what we did. And in the meantime, Bill accepted a job in Charlotte, and so we moved to Charlotte, and so this was God's way of getting me out of her life so that she could live life and so that she could grow up. I fully believe that. And so we were living in Charlotte, and we were still keeping the communication open, you know. It was still, you know, she would come to see us, and we would call and talk to each other on the phone. And then one day, she called me on the phone at work one day, and she says, "Mom, David and I want to get married. Will you help me plan a wedding?" And I said, "I sure will." And so that was a healing time for us. And so we planned that wedding, and I know she let me do exactly like I wanted to do. I know that. But that was a time for us to heal. And I'll tell you about Kelly in a little while. And then shortly after I had asked Kelly to leave, the big thing happened. You know, Bill was in AA doing a great job. I was in Al-Anon. I was going to meetings. I was doing service work. I was just involved. I really was. Thought everything was going fine. And then one day, he came home singing a song I didn't want to hear. And it goes something like this: "Please release me. Let me go. I don't love you anymore." And buddy, I thought I was going to die then. I really thought that I was going to die. And you know, I had said to a lot of people, you can't depend on somebody else for your happiness. And I believed that. I believed it. And this was the time that it really came home to me, because I was faced with the fact that I might not be with him any longer. And I knew that I was just going to have to do something, because I really thought I was going to die. But you know what I had to do? I had to call my sponsor, and I had to go to meetings, and I had to read the literature, and I had to pray my prayers. And you know, God brought me through that. And I usually forget to say that he came back. He didn't stay. I usually forget to say that, but he did come back. But that separation was probably the best thing that ever happened to our relationship, because I realized that I could not depend on him. I could not depend on him to make me happy. And that's really when I thought the Al-Anon program was working for me before, but this is really when the Al-Anon program started working for me. I started digging in. I started going to meetings, and God brought me through it, just like it. You know, you see the miracle all the time in everybody's face in this room. You see it. You see it work. And I'm here to tell you that it does work. God will not let you down. I want you to hear. If you don't hear anything that I say today, anything else, God will not let you down. Well, you know, things, you know, we were in Charlotte, and things were going along really good. Our son was married. Our son got married first. And let me tell you about Steve now. He will turn 40 on March the 5th of this year. And I don't even feel like I'm 40. And it's really hard for me to understand that. But he's married to I couldn't have picked out a better wife for him. I love her with all my heart. And they have four boys, and they're real involved in their church. And I tell them every once in a while, you know, y'all are my role models. I want to be like you when I grow up. Because they're a close-knit family, and they love each other, and they're just leading a great life. And I'm so grateful for that. I am so grateful for that. Kelly is married now. She just turned 39. And she's married to a big old guy named David who loves the ground she walks on. And to tell you how Kelly and my relationship has changed and how it is today, when she had her first child, it was a girl. She named her Kay. So I don't need any other explanation. I guess if you would ask her today who her best friend is, she would say her mom, because I consider her one of my best friends. But it's all because of this program. The things that I learned here, the people in this program who worked with me and carried me through those hard times, that's what this program is about. So, let me tell you about my relationship with my husband today. I think for the last 10 years has been the best years of our lives. I won't lie to you and say it's always been good, because you know I can't say that. But I love him more today than I ever have, because I feel safe with him today. And I don't know who's changed. I don't know if he's changed or if I've changed. And I think it's a little bit of both, because I think God has worked with us together and has helped us through these times together. And I am so grateful for it. I can't tell you how grateful I am. When I get up here, my mind just goes, you know, this way and that way and everything, and I hope I'm clearing everything up. One of the things that I learned when I first came into Al-Anon is that I needed to be good to myself. I didn't do that for a long time. I don't know why. But about 15 years ago, I decided to take some golf lessons. Bill and I wanted to take golf lessons, and so I did. See, I didn't think I could do anything. And so we took lessons, and I got addicted to it. I really, really love to play golf. And I can do that. You know, I didn't think I could do it, you know. But I won't go on the tour anytime soon, but I can break 100 once in a while. And my goal is to get better. And I'm real grateful for that. About 3 years ago, when I was in the fourth grade, and that was a long time ago, I took piano lessons. And I didn't practice, and I just gave it up. I've always regretted that I didn't continue with that. And about 3 years ago, I decided, well, I'm going to buy me a piano, and I'm going to take piano lessons. And so I did. And I found out that I could learn, that I was not dumb anymore, that I could learn new things. Now, I won't be at Carnegie Hall either anytime soon, but I can sit down and enjoy playing now, and I'm real grateful for that. And it's because I stuck with this program and realized, stayed long enough till I could start liking me. Here lately, I've been thinking a lot about what makes it work for us, Bill and I. Several girls that have flattered me and asked me to be their sponsor, and I don't know, they seem to look at us and say, think we've got it made, and, you know, I don't know about that, but anyway, they share with me what's going on with their lives, and all I've got is my experience. All I've got is what happened to me, and all I've got is what I do. And all I have to share with them is what I do. And I figured out about 10 or 15 years ago, that we needed to be on the same side, Bill and I. And I think we are on the same side. We both want the same things in life. We both want peace. We both want happiness, and we both want peace with each other. And that's what we strive for. For so often I see people, and this is where I was at one time too. He's on this side and she's on this side, and they're working against each other. I can remember the day I decided, I don't know, there was something we were talking about and we weren't getting anywhere in that discussion. And Bill said, Kay, I'm on your side. I'm on your side. And I realized then that we should be on the same side. And so then that does not mean that I don't have an opinion different from his. I have a lot of opinions that are different from his. But we are on the same side. We're working together with each other. And that's the way it works for me, and that's all I've got to share. That's all I can share with somebody else is the way I work. And the only way, you know, I have a lot of problems. A lot of problems come up, and I don't know but one way to solve them. I don't know but one thing to do about them, and that's to call my sponsor, to go to meetings, and to read the literature, and to pray my prayers, and to be willing to help somebody else who's hurting worse than I am. I was in a meeting 2 weeks ago, and there were three newcomers there. And one was a young man of about 40 years old, and his wife had just gotten out of treatment. And he said, I can remember it so well, he said, I told my wife if she would just do exactly like I said, she would be okay. And you know, I knew what he was saying, because that's the way I thought when I first came in here. If he would just do like I said, he would be all right. Well, you know, he came back the next week, and he was there. And you know, I hope he'll keep coming back, because I hope he comes back and stays long enough until the miracle happens with him. And I think he will, you know. And if I don't go to meetings, I'm going to miss that. And I don't want to miss that, folks. Well, I don't know if that made any sense today or not, but I am so glad this is over with. Thank you all so much.
Well, now I know Kate.